Welcome to Leaf Style, where education, culture, and cannabis collide. I am Juma, and my co-host is a medical cannabis and emergency medicine physician and the founder of Ask Dr. Lynn. How are you doing, Dr. Lynn?
I'm wonderful, Juma. Happy to see you. Thank you so much. Juma is our resident attorney, sociologist, and all-around global citizen. Happy to be sharing this platform today with our amazing guest, Kim Rivers. Let me tell you a little bit about Kim. Kim Rivers is the Executive Chief Officer of Trulieve, a national multi-state operator based in Florida. Rivers joined Trulieve at its inception and has been the key driver for the company's customer-centric vision, strong growth, strategic expansion, and industry-leading profitability. Rivers serves as the second vice chair for the National Cannabis Roundtable. She received her bachelor's in multinational business and political science at Florida State University and her law degree, her JD degree, from the University of Florida. Let's welcome Kim Rivers to Leaf Style today.
Hi. Welcome. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Really looking forward to this conversation. So let's get right into it. How did your relationship with cannabis begin?
Yeah, so my relationship with cannabis, and that's a funny word, relationship, because I grew up in Jacksonville in Duval County. So shout out to all my Jacksonville folks out there. And my father was in law enforcement. So he was in law enforcement for 20 years. And my mother was an assistant principal of an elementary school. And so I grew up kind of in an interesting, I guess, viewpoint or lens by which I viewed cannabis. And then I had a little bit of a rebellious streak, I would say, as it sometimes happens in high school. And also I had a more intimate relationship with cannabis at that point. But I would say that, you know, my true passion and dedication to cannabis and to the plant began with Trulieve's inception. And, you know, it's been just an incredible journey. And really, I would say that my eyes and heart were open when initially, right, we were starting as a business venture. And as I got to know more and more folks who had such personal, real, intimate needs for this plant, particularly mothers with children with severe and significant, situations that they were struggling with, where this plant as medicine was a key part of their lives. And it was then that it became more than, I would say, just something that I had maybe a passing relationship with, but something that was much deeper than that. And, I wake up every day with a thankfulness, I guess, in my heart, but also a very, very strong mission, which is to continue to provide access. And so access has been a key part of what motivates me to do what I do, because I think that everyone should have access to cannabis, and that it should be and is, and it absolutely, there's no reason why it should not be about personal choice as part of, your everyday life, if you so choose. So, it's been a journey for sure.
I agree 100%, especially being one of the providers down here in Florida. It's about autonomy and patients weighing in on their decision on how they choose to medicate and actually having access and the opportunity to be able to reach the plan if they need to, rather than, you know, pushing Western medicine, but showing them an entire holistic, you know, compost to how we can address the medical needs. You have to tell us, since you started your intimate relationship early on, when did you first start smoking?
Oh gosh. So I don't know if my parents are going to be listening to this, but, as I said, I first experimented with cannabis back in high school. And now cannabis is a regular part of my life, part of my routine. It's funny. I actually was just doing an interview for CNBC in Miami this week, and I was talking to the reporter about how, you know, my regimen and how, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I like to smoke on my patio, just kind of, you know, wind down and take everything in and process. And he was like, oh my gosh, do you want that on camera? And I was like, what? You're sitting in my dispensary and you're interviewing me about cannabis, and that's still the conversation that we're having. Like, okay. I'm like, yes, sure. Please put it on camera. So, I think it's interesting that, you know, while, you know, cannabis consumption has increased so dramatically over recent years, that there still remains, right? And some of us in sort of the echo chamber, as I call it, forget, right, that there still is this perception divide between kind of quote mainstream and those of us that are in and live with cannabis as part of our lives. And so again, conversation has to continue. That's why, you know, you guys are, what the work that you do is so critical, because it's moments like that that just continue to catch me off guard and say, oh my gosh, like there's still so much work that we have to do.
Yeah.
But that's why it's super important with you keeping it on camera, because it destigmatizes it that we have a beautiful professional leader executive in the industry who uses it personally. So that's like when patients ask, do you have your card? I'm like, but of course I have my card. Why wouldn't I have my medical marijuana card? You know, and it's like a aha or a wow moment. And when you speak about it on national networks and outlets like that, it helps to really destigmatize it. So I'm so glad you kept it in. Juma.
Yes. I wanted to sort of backtrack a little bit and tell us a little bit before True Leaf. What was your career background? What were you doing before you joined True Leaf?
Yeah, so I say that I'm a recovering lawyer. I try every day not to practice. I went to, as you mentioned, I graduated from the University of Florida, although I will have to say go Noles. So I'm at heart, I'm a Seminole, you know, a couple generations of Nole blood there. But after law school, I went to practice law in Atlanta. On mergers and acquisitions and securities. And it really struck me that I had a passion with working with companies and with individuals and getting to know those businesses. And I thought it was fascinating that I had a chance to really dig into, through transactional work, you know, each business and each company and understand what made them tick, what made them successful, what put them in the place that they were doing something big, because that's typically when I was involved in a big transaction or a big, you know, kind of pivot point, if you will, in their company. And that, you know, transitioned into me really wanting to be on the other side of the table and getting into business myself. And so I moved back to Florida. I was involved in real estate for a while, which also gave me an interesting perspective because I got to know what sort of motivates individuals and individual decision making, which I think is really important in what sort of work I'm doing now, what I bring to Trulieve. And then was an entrepreneur, and so have been involved in a number of different industries, a number of different businesses, everything from hospitality to tech companies, repositioning hotel portfolios, et cetera. So I've had a great and interesting a professional life. And then of course Trulieve is has been my number one and only focus over the last 5 years.
Right, I saw one of your very first projects was the DoubleTree in Tallahassee that you renovated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a staple in the city.
Yeah. So that's interesting. That was kind of a passion project. It wasn't, so we did a bunch of hotel repositioning of kind of less glamorous, if you will, projects across the Southeast. So taking, hotel projects that weren't making it and, again, kind of renovating, packaging them, rebranding them, and then selling them. So we did a lot of that, which really is community revitalization work as well. Because as we know, when you have a property that's that large and it's run down in a community, it can really add to a negative stigma on a pretty significant level. And so, Tallahassee, I've always been very tied to the idea of giving back and having, using your skills and talents to benefit places where you live, again, places where you're laying roots, your community, you know, the community in which we have the pleasure of, my family is here and, you know, our business is here. And so really the DoubleTree was a similar project. It was a very old school. It was built in the 70s. rundown kind of property that had kind of declined over the years. But it's in the heart of downtown Tallahassee. And so that was a passion project for me to bring in kind of a renowned design team, change that property, add an entire floor onto the roof, which is a kind of a staple now of sort of downtown city life, in an effort to connect government and the local community, as well as the university community here in Tallahassee.
And that's why you have the headquarters for Trulief in Tallahassee as well, too, and employ thousands of people there. You're really honoring what your commitment is to give back to the city, and through opportunity and engagement and economic improvement.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that, you know, early on, so there's a couple of thoughts there. You know, early on, we had an opportunity to move, obviously, headquarters wherever. And it was important because, as I've mentioned, access is critical. And when you look at the state of Florida, the Panhandle area where we sit is actually the most rural part of the state. And, you know, a lot of other companies were very focused on, you know, the Orlandos, the Tampas, the Miamis, you know, even Jacksonville. But for us, again, it was important that we not lose sight of folks that we were really trying to serve, and that when we put in our application that we were about access for all of Florida, not just the big cities, but also, you know, making sure that access came to more rural communities, that we actually stood behind that. And so, you know, and the other part of that was also investing in you know, in Quincy, and which we continue to invest in the Panhandle area in terms of our job creation, which is, you know, a majority minority community. That was key to make sure that we were lifting up that community as our growth continued, that we were continuing to reinvest in that community. We're actually the largest employer now. We're the largest power consumer there, which a lot of folks don't think about, but, you know, that's a, in that community, that's a private-public partnership. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, again, it's walking the walk, not just talking the talk. And that's a hallmark of how we've chosen to build the company.
Well said.
All right. And talking about Trulief, let's talk about the state of Trulief. How many stores currently, as of today, right? How many states?
Yeah, changes. Yeah, 11 states, 161 stores.
Wow.
Today.
Wow.
Which is crazy to think about. And I think that, you know, the point there, I think folks sort of forget we started as a small business. You know, we started with 10 employees, you know, writing, you know, personal checks, bootstrapping along the way. I did every job from HR to legal to distribution to filling capsules in the back on Christmas Eve to, you know, all of the things. And, you know, it really is, and this industry provides, right, opportunity for fast growth and accelerated growth. But yeah, we started again back in 2015 with 10 of us. And now we have over 9,000 employees across the country.
Wow. 2015. What kind of revenue numbers did you do last year, 2021?
Well, so we have not yet reported as a publicly traded company. This is part of the fun. We have not yet reported our full year numbers. However, you know, we have, you know, significant growth, obviously 2020 to 2021. You know, the last year over year growth numbers that we presented were over, you know, 70% year over year. And the year before that, we did over 100% year over year growth. We started in the negative when we started. It took us 2 years to turn a profit. Like I said, we were, you know, our group of founders, we were writing checks, we were seeking investment, you know, just as typical, you know, entrepreneurs. We went public in 2018. We had just begun. We had a year of profitability. And by profitability, by the way, I mean, like, you know, a couple dollars. Like, this is not like, you know, like we got into the green. We took the company public. And then, of course, we're able to use our public currency as additional fuel for growth. But, you know, we certainly are the reported number on a pro forma basis between Harvest and Trulieve for last quarter, because that's when we closed that transaction, would have been on a revenue top line number, would have been, if you just take those two companies and put them together, a little over $300 million.
Wow. Not bad for a business that started in 2015 with 10 employees. Obviously, we're going to, being biased, attribute a lot of that incredible growth to their CEO. But what do you really attribute that to, that sort of growth in the medical cannabis space?
Yeah, I would. I mean, first and foremost, it's about the team. I mean, and so we have an incredible team who pour their, you know, passion into what we do every single day. Also, of course, to the customers and to our patients. I think, you know, this company was built on a philosophy that we grow one patient at a time, one customer interaction at a time. It's been really critical for us to listen and create feedback loops that are embedded in our culture. Across the organization, even as we've grown, to make sure that we're listening to feedback, we're being proactive in responding to that feedback, and that we're making improvements. It's all about incremental improvements. This industry changes, and this will continue to change so quickly that if you're not, you know, keeping up, and what I mean by keeping up is, again, listening and responding to what, where, you know, where customers want you to focus, changes in technology, changes in, you know, in innovation, on the product development side, changes in how customers want to interact with you, how they want to get feedback, you know, to you, then, you know, I think that, you know, we would not have been as successful in terms of our growth rate. So I do think that it's, and being ambitious, right? Being bold, being willing to move when other folks weren't willing to move. You know, we didn't wait for the patient count to get created in Florida. We went ahead, right? I mean, and I think that, again, we, in our business plan, it was that we are on a mission. We have a mission to provide access to medical cannabis, and we were going to do that. And, you know, whereas I think a lot of other folks maybe hesitated or didn't want to move, you know, ahead, we, you know, made the decision, to move ahead and to do what we said we were going to do. And I think that, again, when we talk about that trusting relationship with our customers, that's part of it, right? You have to do what you say you're going to do, when you say you're going to do it.
Absolutely.
I think that's really key in being a visionary as well too, because when we started, like we said, in 2016 and 17, there were less than 10,000 patients at that point. Now here we are today, over 670,000 patients, legal medical marijuana patients, who have their active card in the state of Florida. So you, like you said, you didn't wait for the numbers to increase. You used the tools that you had and the license you had to go into locations where patients could access you. And really, I will say Trulieve is built on and emphasizes compassion and quality product. But most importantly, you educate physicians. And that concept in reaching out to the actual providers and providing education for them, whether you have the reps coming to our offices, you have your website set up so that there's specific questions for us, there's updates on the product all the time. We are able to touch the clients directly, touch the patients directly, and help guide them to navigate the system on where to go to get the best education.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's thank you for that. And our physician education team is a key part of how, again, they were an integral part of us, of our team when we launched. And it's funny, you know, I have an anecdote that when we opened the first store, you know, we were so focused on getting the doors open, getting the products approved. And then we had our grand opening event, or we were scheduled to have our grand opening event. And we realized, oh, my gosh, there are no physicians in the panhandle. There are no patients in the panhandle. So we were opening our first store in Tallahassee.
Who's going to come?
And we didn't have anyone to sell any product to. And so we actually had to medically transport the first patient in from Pasco County, I'm not kidding, into the grand opening to make our first sale. And then it was great. I mean, it was a lot of fanfare, right? And then the next day came around and we were like, oh gosh, now what do we do? Because we have this great store. So we didn't have a choice, right? I mean, we needed to get out and we needed to make sure that physicians were educated and that we had, you know. I mean, so it was really, it was kind of a classic entrepreneurial moment, if you will, when, you know, we had all the
Where are they going to come from? You have to have the physicians.
And it was such a challenge in this state. We sponsored this big doctors conference, and it was a big check that we had to write to be this headline sponsor. Mm-hmm. and had a big booth, the whole thing. We were like, oh, we're going to invest. We're going to have polos. It's going to be amazing. They're going to love it. And during that conference, they took up the issue of medical marijuana, and they voted that it had no medicinal properties. At the conference that we were the headline sponsor of. Yeah.
What?
So that's what, just so everybody knows, that's the world that we launched this company.
Yes. That was the climate that you walked into. And look that's how 5 years has made a huge difference. We have over 2,200 licensed physicians in the state right now. The problem is with all of those physicians being licensed, they don't all practice prescribing because they're still very, you know, unsure about how to navigate or how to educate their patients. So we still have a ways to go, but I mean, that's so much better than just one.
yes, for sure.
And something we wanted to touch on is pre-2018, you guys were still a private company, and you talked a little bit about a lot of expenditures early on, you know, and not turning a profit. When we speak about some of the issues facing, you know, social equity here in the state of Florida and throughout the country, we always think about the capital. The capital is so important. Can you speak to that as a person who was there from the beginning and know about that pain early on and what that capital really meant to you and to grow the business?
Sure, absolutely. I think that that's one of the most important topics when we discuss social equity. And I think, unfortunately, it's one of the topics that folks tend to glance over or, you know, again, kind of have the attitude that if you build it, they will come, which is not the right way, I don't believe, the right approach. You know, I've talked a lot and continue to push through my role with the National Cannabis Roundtable as an example for a true bridge for folks, because getting a license is just step one. And there are so many examples of folks where in the social equity arena who have gotten licenses and then what, right? And what we've seen with programs in different markets that we participate in is there's a whole bunch of different attempts, right, at social equity programs. Quite frankly, I don't think that any of them have necessarily hit the mark. And a large part of that, I believe, it's not so much, you know, again, I think that absolutely licensing is a key component, but it's the then what question or conversation that hasn't been fully addressed. And it, I believe, will, you know, require a robust conversation about funding opportunities that are meaningful and that are sustainable and that are equitable. And, you know, it's likely going to take a combination of both local, state, and federal programming. The federal level, we've got some great programs through the Small Business Association for women and minority-owned businesses. Right now, cannabis companies can't access those. I've been beating that drum and will continue to beat that drum because that's a very simple fix and can be done by the Biden administration directly to allow access to those funds. And it's low interest, like very low interest loans, at which would completely be a game changer, because as we know, cannabis lending historically is at near predatory rates, especially for businesses that are starting up. So if we can get some differentiation between, again, women and minority owned businesses at low interest, below market, like below traditional market levels, that would be huge. Then I think that it's really going to be both local and state stepping up in a meaningful way to provide bridge capital. Again, grant programs, as well as some additional low interest funding. And then the other part of it that, again, we don't talk about as much is really the mentorship and the opportunity for collaboration with companies. And there's has not been a great framework for that, again, across the country. We currently are in a relationship with a group in Massachusetts and have spent a significant amount of money with them, getting them started and trying to be that bridge. But again, there's just not a great framework, right? And I think that there's, unfortunately, there have been some, I'll call it less than desirable actors out there that, you know, have used relationships to ultimately, you know, take the license and strip equity. And I think that's what really the conversation needs to center around, right? Like, if we are truly trying to achieve ownership, which I believe we should be with respect to social equity, it's how can we create a meaningful platform for those businesses to be set up for success. Because if we're not holistic about it, if we don't think about it from start to finish, you unfortunately, 9 times out of 10, will be setting folks up for potential failure. And so it's gotta be looked at in a 360 way. And you know, so we're gonna continue to try and move the needle there, but licensing is just the tip of the spear, honestly.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's the one that gets the headlines, right? But the cannabis industry is way more possibilities and options than being a dispensary. But as we talk about this industry being such a new legal industry in a lot of ways, it will take time, and there's not a lot of maybe clear examples of states that are doing it right. There's really no states, but that's doing it right. But I think, can you speak a little bit about commitment from some of these industry players and more of a long-term commitment? This thing, it did not happen overnight. It will take time, but talk about maybe Trulieve's position there and how they see a long-term commitment to social equity in cannabis.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, as quite frankly, the only hint of diversity in a lot of rooms that I enter, which is, you know, I mean, which is sad to say the least. You know, I believe that it is absolutely one of my, you know, personal goals for Trulieve to be a trendsetter and kind of a not even a trendsetter, but someone who is seen as a leader. And again, we're not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk. That starts from within. I do think that it's very, very important for companies to be held accountable for their own practices within their companies, because first and foremost, it's important for me to foster an environment where there can be success and growth for folks that look, you know, that you know, span the spectrum, if you will, of backgrounds and upbringings and skin tones and opinions and, you know, identities across the organization. You know, there's been study after study that has proven that the more diverse an organization is, particularly in its leadership, the actual more successful that it will be. And I think that is so true with cannabis, because, you know, look at the demographics and the folks that we touch every day. I mean, go sit in a Trulieve store anywhere in the country. And there's, you know, just the range of folks who are our customers. And so it's so important to have true representation from within. And I say all that to say that, you know, we just, we're the first MSO to come out with a true ESG report, which is again, environmental, social and governance, where we're setting standards and we're holding ourselves accountable. We're looking at diversity across the organization, not just lower level, because it's very easy to have, you know, a great headline number. But then when you start breaking it down in terms of how folks are actually progressing through the organization, those numbers can break down as well. So making sure that we're holding ourselves accountable in terms of career tracking and pathways within our organization. We did just announce that we now have 50% of our board is female. So I think that's a first for the industry as well. Again, but we have work to do. Then the second is where we place our investment. And so I mentioned having, you know, significant investment in Gadsden County, which is a majority minority community. Same thing in Holyoke in Massachusetts, where we chose to put our cultivation and processing facility there. So being strategic in terms of where we're making investment so that we can have not only an impact on that community, but on surrounding, you know, surrounding impact within the, you know, kind of the broader subset. And again, bringing folks up with us is really, really important. And then I would say, so that's kind of our internal. And then when we think about external, it's how are we partnering? How are we being that good, credible partner with both third-party organizations, as well as, you know, offering mentorship and space for folks to learn from, you know, our expertise to the extent that we have those to give in these different markets. And so, you know, we partner with Minorities for Medical Marijuana is a key partnership for us and has been over the years. You know, Roz, it's so funny. I met her in the halls of the Florida State Capitol when she was advocating for FAMU to receive part of the licensing fee, which, I mean, I met with her. I was like, absolutely, this is ridiculous. FAMU should receive part of the licensing fee. Give me your talking points, right? Help me help you, right? And we'll just incorporate these in, and I'll help push it across. And I think that those types of partnerships where it's on the ground and it's, and maybe unfortunately surprising for folks that we would be side by side and advocating jointly, I think can be very powerful. And certainly, you know, we were able to get that as one example across the finish line. I think that, so also Minorities for Medical Marijuana, we've sponsored a number of licensing clinics across the country. A lot of them in states that we're not in, because it's not about that, right? It's about how are we ensuring that folks are set up for success. And with Roz, I really wanted to make sure that, again, it's not just about the license, but do you have your business plan together? Do you have your financial plan together? What are you going to do, the then what, you know, conversation? And then, of course, we partner with a number of other organizations as well. Last Prisoner Project is also one that we're very involved with, along with our expungement clinics that we run across the country to assist with folks getting cannabis convictions off of their record to set them up for longer term success and hopefully, right, a future in the industry if they choose to pursue it. So it's a long list. I can talk about this for a long time. But I think that, again, you asked the right question about what is our long term commitment. And what I would tell you is that the long-term commitment comes from it being embedded in who we are and having accountability metrics and making sure that we're holding ourselves both internally and externally to a high standard that you all can review, right, and give feedback in terms of are we doing what we said we were going to do, which, of course, is critical.
And can you give a little bit?
Absolutely.
Because you brought up something interesting there about this internal report across, I think, environment, demographics, ESG.
Environment,
yes.
Social, and government report.
Yes, yeah. ESG. Now, this is great because not only I think that's a great start to get the data, but you guys are the leaders in this space right now. So a lot of power goes there and the power to set standards. Can you talk a little bit about the why there, what's actually in it, and sort of the bigger picture you hope to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so the why was really because there was a void, right, in this industry. And it was really important for us to set a standard that then will, certainly for public companies, for others to feel compelled to follow, right? And so what we did is we pulled together best practices, and there are different measurement standards, if you will, that are utilized across different industries. Cannabis doesn't have that yet. So we actually pulled from a number of other industries, which created an even higher standard to formulate what the metrics would look like for cannabis. And so when we talk about, for example, environmental, we have a carbon footprint neutrality goal that's listed there. We talk about what we do with wastewater reclamation as an example. A lot of folks don't realize that we actually formulate our own nutrients at Trulieve, and that's significantly more environmentally friendly than the alternative. What we're doing with our recycling program, what we do with our power going to LEDs versus traditional. So there's a lot of great information in terms of what we're doing today, along with benchmarks in terms of where we're headed in the future. The same thing on the other metrics. And so for social, we're talking about the investment that we have made both internally and externally through our social equity and DEI initiatives, who our partners are, what, you know, that partnership I just mentioned in Massachusetts, you know, we talk about how much we've invested there, what that relationship looks like, how we think that it could be potentially a model that we are looking to roll out in other states, in other markets. And then on the governance side, similarly, right, we just talked about board makeup. We're talking about, you know, our goals of transparency for our industry and, you know, of course, importantly for our shareholders so that they can, again, have trust in how we are reporting and making sure that they're brought along with us as we continue to evolve as a company. And so for us, again, it was the right thing to do. And we felt like it was important and that we wanted to set these benchmarks so that we could, again, continue to measure our successes as well as our opportunities, right? I'm the first to say that we don't do everything perfect and there's always room for improvement. There absolutely is. Incremental improvement, I mentioned at the beginning of the chat, is key. And you got to continue to grow and learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we speak about that with a mechanism to collect the data in such a new industry to really see what's there. As we also talk about social equity, we think of ownership and those things that are necessary where these communities that have been most affected by the war on drugs aren't just, access is great, but aren't just consumers and marketers, and what we can do to actually make it equitable and a little more ownership. And I think a lot of that data can help that if it's collected, used, and shared accordingly.
Absolutely.
Yes. So that being said, what's next for TrueLeave? What are we up to? What can we expect in the near future from Kim Rivers and TrueLeave?
We are continuing to execute. We're continuing to grow. I'm really excited about, of course, our recent closing of the Harvest transaction that grew the company in a very significant way. It solidified our position of leadership, not just, of course, in the Southeast, but also in the Southwest, with Arizona being their home market. Harvest, for folks who maybe aren't familiar, they've been a company for over a decade, so on the West Coast. So that brings a very different perspective on the industry, very different perspective on, you know, product development and brands and how that market has grown and changed. And so learning from that experience has been really wonderful, and we'll continue to integrate product lines and again know-how into our combined company. We say that, you know, now this is NewCo, and it's been wonderful because we added a bunch of talent and a bunch of team members to the TrueLeave team, and so continuing our path to create cultural alignment, which is always a big thing when you have a merger of that size, along with operational efficiencies and alignment across the combined platform. So we just announced today that we purchased a cultivation facility in Arizona to bring additional high quality flower to the market there. And then in Pennsylvania and our Northeast platform, continuing to expand there as well. So, there's going to be future growth ahead. And I would say that, as we grow, continuing to be mindful of, the national conversation that's continuing to evolve around us as well.
Absolutely. One of the things I was thinking about with TrueLeave, you have every option for delivery. I was wondering, are you considering or interested in doing other methods, like maybe patches or transdermal or maybe intranasal, kind of some of the things we're seeing in Israel with the research in terms of where the direction is going for delivery? Is that an option?
Yeah. So, well, we actually have had a nasal spray on the market from the very beginning. So we have a nasal spray. It's very powerful. It's a great product for folks who suffer from, severe seizure or spasticity conditions that need a fast onset in a very, powerful dose. We have and will continue to look at, I would say the sublingual strips and also, patches have been interesting. Patches have been a bit of a challenge just because our quality standards in terms of consistency of delivery. We've done a lot of research and are continuing to research. We're doing a lot of work actually on the minor cannabinoid grouping. And so you all probably see our CBN lines that have come out. We're also looking at CBG and a couple of the other lesser known, if you will, or lesser commercialized cannabinoids in different formulations. We've got some really great innovation happening on the edible front. So we'll be rolling out some additional edible products here very, very soon, as well as we just increased our capacity by, I want to say 10 times on the hydrocarbon front. So there's going to be a lot of products coming out as well, using additional live terpenes, which we think is really, wonderful to be able to offer additional, whole plant entourage effect based products to the market. So lots of new things always on the horizon. And we announced, as you all probably saw, this is part of our West Coast connection. We announced our partnership with Alien Labs and connected cannabis. And so their genetic portfolio, as well as their, higher end, if you will, cultivars will be making their way to our market here as well.
Wow.
Awesome. A lot of the minor cannabinoid conversation came up during really at the height of COVID, and using some of those CBDA and CBGA, kind of components to help fight with COVID and its anti-inflammatory components to it. So it's really cool to see the conversation lending beyond just our typical 14, ailments that are listed in Florida, but helping to serve on a series that could eventually lead to decreased inflammation and secondary inflammation from COVID disease. So awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And lastly, Kim, what does social equity mean to you?
Oh gosh. Social equity is about true equality, which means, again, it's soup to nuts, right? It's not just one part of the conversation. It's the holistic sum of the parts, if you will, on the conversation, and making sure that we have true representation in the industry at every level. It means that when I walk into a conference, I'm not the only one who isn't a white male at this level. It means when I sit down and have a conversation with board members that there's, different faces around the table. So it's really, again, it's that internal and external conversation. And as you said, right, it's about actual true ownership and true opportunity to create and participate in what I believe is this generational wealth opportunity that we have in front of us, which is cannabis.
And just for the record, where are we on this scale of the cannabis industry?
Oh gosh, unfortunately, right? We are not where we need to be by any measurable metric. We've got a lot of work to do.
A lot of work to do. Thank you. And Dr. Lynn, any last words here?
Beautiful discussion today. It really speaks to the future of what Trulieve is doing and the plan for integration and to help others, even in states where you're not currently located. So that speaks a lot to the community effort that the company has as a whole and being inclusive of all races, ages, cultures, genders, that is really important. And I love the diversity. I personally go to the Hollandale store all the time. That's where I do a lot of my education in the Dania Point area as well too. So, I'm in there often, and just the makeup of the staff and the education that it provides for customers, it's really a blessing for the area to have that located close by. So congratulations. Trulieve has been an amazing asset to the state that no one, expected. So it was really a key point in the conversation for advocating for medicinal patients and making sure that it's accessible. So congratulations, and we welcome this conversation to continue our part 2 next time.
Likewise, thank you so much again for having me.
Absolutely. This is Leaf Style. Thank you, Kim. No longer a subculture, a Leaf Style.